So we've just started this text called Upadesh Sar, which is the essence of all the teachings. In a very brief verses, the teacher Raman Maharishi has given us the essence of all the teachings. And last 2 or 3 weeks, we talked about Karma Yoga or the path of service, how you can serve the world working unselfishly and dedicating all your activities to God. So we had covered that in the last 3 weeks. We do have some CDs which kind of has the essence of what we have talked about, as what is Karma Yoga, what is action and what is action dedicated to the Lord. If anybody is interested in buying, they are available. So you can look at that. So having now decided I'm going to serve the world and dedicate it to the Lord, what exactly do we mean by dedicating to God? What do we mean by devotion? Devotion is love for God or love for something higher. Like, you know, a person can be devoted to God or could be devoted to his community. You know, I want to serve my community, or devoted to music. You know, I'm very devoted to music. I'm devoted to, so something that is, or devoted to my church. So anything where I reduce my individual ego, I and mine, and widen it, that is called devotion. So as we had talked about last week, you can, you know, from me alone, I, you know, serve my family, then my community, then my city, my country, and ultimately the whole world, and that is called devotion. What are the qualities of a devotee? As we said, love for an object of the world becomes very exclusive. I love my wife, my child, my job, my house, my dog, my cat. I remember one time people used to have a pet rock. I love my rock. I don't know how you can keep a rock as a pet, but that was quite a craze, I should say. So the love for an object is exclusive. That alone I love. But when I love God, then I cannot exclusively say, okay, I only love God. No, because the love becomes inclusive. Because just as God has created me, has created every being on this earth, all animals, all birds, all plants, all fish, all humans, all races, all communities. So the true love for God is inclusive, where it includes everybody else. You do not exclude. If a person says that my religion says only love people of this community or this church or this people who worship in this building and don't worship in the building across the street, then that is not true devotion, that is not true love. So the qualities of a devotee are: A, it is all inclusive. B, it reduces the I and mine, and it is more he and his, or she and hers, you know, to worship the mother goddess. But it is that total consciousness, the Lord who is appearing in all, and the person, whatever actions the person carries out, it is not as I am doing it, but I am a humble servant of the Lord, I am an instrument of the Lord. So the attitude of an instrument, so the ego is reduced, the arrogance is reduced, and when there is success, you dedicate it to the Lord. That's what we have studied last time. Now, how to strengthen love for God? How to strengthen this devotion? As even in the text, Swamiji says, that when we go to the temple or we go to the church, and either we go because I'm in trouble, or I just go because it's a Sunday, so I'm supposed to go to church, you know, or whatever reason, I go there and I pray. And I pray to the Lord. Some people go, you know, with a laundry list. Okay, God, give me this, give me this, give me this, give me this. And if he gives me 7 out of 8 and the 8th one he doesn't give, then I become unhappy. So others say, no, I don't want anything, I just want you. So that is true devotion or true love, where you do not use God to get anything else, but you say, God, I want you and you alone. And God already knows what I want. So if I deserve it, I will get it. If not, I am fine with it. And that is what is called as prasad buddhi. But how to strengthen this devotion? Let us talk a little bit about that. Say I want to learn music. Now I am an engineer, I am very busy in my job, I am an executive in some engineering company, and I am working morning to evening, and I am, you know, in the company, and I am traveling, and I am on business, and I am on the site, and I am on the project. But secretly I love music. As a child I loved it, and I wanted to be a musician, but somehow my parents told me, you know, musicians never make any money, musicians are always poor, so you need to get a career, you cannot have music as a career. So they forced me into engineering college, and so I went to engineering college and I became quite successful. I, you know, got a job working for Chevron or, you know, some big engineering, some big chemical company, and I'm very successful. But inside I have this desire that I must learn music. So how can I do that? I'm so busy, I don't have time, you know, I hardly have time to practice. How am I to inculcate my love for music? How am I to? So the way to do it is that you slowly reduce whatever time you're spending in your business. Do what is essential, but the non-essential things that, okay, after I have finished my job and I come home, then I start slowly developing more time for music, slowly start spending more time for music. So I buy CDs, listen to the music, I buy books and read about great musicians, I join a music school in the evenings and weekends, and I take classes, and then I start enjoying, I practice every day 1 hour, 2 hours, and I increase my practice time, and I slowly immerse myself in music. I associate with good musicians, I join a music club where, you know, I join an orchestra or a symphony, you know, where depending on my level of expertise. So slowly I increase my involvement in music, and then slowly my interest in music comes so powerful that eventually I say, I worked enough in this job. Either I cut down or I even quit if my desire is that strong. If I really, really want to become a great musician, they say you can't have both. You cannot be a great engineer and a great musician. So you have to pick. Or even if I don't give up my job, but whatever extra time I have every day, 2 hours, 3 hours, I spend in studying, in preparing, in practicing, in listening to music, associating with great musicians, taking classes, taking lessons. So similarly, if I want to strengthen my devotion, because what we find is that when I'm in the temple or I'm in the church, my devotion to God is complete. Oh, my mind is so peaceful, I feel so calm, I feel so happy, and I'm so peaceful, and everything is good. And at that time, I have nothing else, no other desire, just to be with God, just to be in the presence of God. And you feel so peaceful when you come out of the temple or church. You feel so nice and so happy. And then what happens? Soon as you come out, you start interacting with the world. And then soon as you start dealing with the world, problems start. You're driving and somebody cuts you off, you know, or honks at you, or show some foul gesture towards you, and immediately your attitude of devotee is gone, and you become angry, you know, and then you honk back, and, you know, and then you immediately your peace of mind is disturbed. Or you come home and somebody tells you, where have you been? You say, I have been to the temple. What is this? You know, you've gone to the temple or church all the time. There is so much work at home. Look, the lawn needs to be cut, and this needs to be repaired, and that needs, or in the so much work, then immediately all that work takes you over, and then from devotee, suddenly you become a husband or a wife or a mechanic or a plumber or a gardener, or so all those other, or a parent, you know, the child needs to be, you know, needs some coaching because his finals are here. So what happens is that your mind very quickly gets disturbed away from the peace and quietude of the devotee. Whatever my particular job is or whatever. So we are not saying that you shouldn't do your work, but what happens is that we get so caught up in that, and our mind gets so disturbed, that the attitude of a devotee vanishes very quickly. And so only for that 1 hour on Sunday, or maybe when you come to the class here for an hour, you know, your mind is peaceful, it is quiet. And even when we meditate as a group, you know, it feels very good. But then as soon as you get out of here, the world takes you over. So what they say is, just as a musician spends more and more time in music, you spend more and more time in devotion, in devotional activities. And we'll talk about the steps in devotion and what are the devotional activities. So spend more time, you know, not only the Sundays in church and all, but at home, take some time aside and say, okay, my half an hour or 1 hour, I'm going to spend with God, either in prayer or in meditation or in reading or listening to some CDs or listening to some good tapes or some good talks. So as I spend time, what you will find is that your mind, which was used to get disturbed, will slowly get strengthened. The devotion will get strengthened. Your attitude will become, you know, better. You will become friendlier with others. You will talk to people kindly. Your mind will become, and then you can associate with, you know, other devotees, you know, for classes like these, or we have, you know, guest speakers coming periodically. 2 weeks from now, we will have a wonderful speaker, Vimal Chaitanya. I can talk about him, but he will be here 2 weeks from today, on Thursday, April 9, 10 and 11. And Thursday and Friday, there will be one talk, and Saturday morning, there will be a talk. You will be getting the email on that. So he's going to talk on Kain Upanishad, which is a very, very beautiful text, which talks about who is this God that pervades the whole universe, what is God's nature and how we can know him. It is similar to this, but at a little more advanced level. You will be getting that email probably the next day or so. So when you have an opportunity to listen to such wonderful speakers, you know, as Vimalji is, you can listen to him. And then in your car, instead of listening to some talk radio or some nonsensical things, if you have a lot of commuting, listen to some beautiful hymns or beautiful music before you go to bed at night, read some good books. So slowly you immerse yourself in that divinity, just as to become a good musician, you have to immerse yourself in music. Or if you want to learn a new language, say you want to learn Spanish, then what do? You know, you buy Spanish books, you buy Spanish CDs, you talk to people who speak Spanish, you know, you try to listen in your car. And so you immerse yourself, buy a Spanish newspaper, watch Spanish TV, watch Spanish soap operas. So just as you can immerse yourself in a language, so similarly you should try to immerse yourself. And you will find that as you spend more and more time in religion or in spirituality or becoming one with God, you will get more and more fascinated by this subject. Your love for God will increase. And what that will do is then your desire to just waste your time in parties or in gossip or in shopping or, you know, just that will automatically reduce. So as you detach from the world, you will attach more to him. So that is how you strengthen your devotion, by spending more time. And then as you spend more time, you will enjoy it more. As you enjoy it more, you will spend more time. It's a vicious circle. And what it does is it makes you a better and better devotee. Just as you more time you spend in music, you become a better musician. Then in the text, Swamiji talks about prasad buddhi. Now that is a concept which is typical to Hindus, but can be applied to all our relationships in the world. What happens is, prasad is what we get in the temple. What happens is, people who go to the temple will take some food or some sweets or some fruits, and they will take a lot of it and they will offer it to the priest in the temple. And the priest, of course, doesn't keep it. The idea is that maybe 3 or 4 people have brought sweets or have brought fruits, but there are 100 people who are visiting the temple. So what he will do is, all the fruits he will distribute to each person. You know, they have been blessed by God. He places them in front of the idol, and then the fruit is blessed by the priest and blessed by God, and then is given to everybody. And so people don't say, oh, you know, I brought a whole bunch of bananas, 20 or 30 bananas, how come I'm getting only one? No, the idea is either one banana is enough because it is a blessing from God, and everybody in whoever visits the temple gets it. That's wonderful. The same thing, I think, in the church also, where they give you that wafer. It is the same concept, that you are getting something which is tangible, which is a blessing from Jesus. They say it's the flesh of Jesus or whatever. So the same principle, that something is tangible, is given, which is blessed by the priest and by the Lord. So what do we mean by prasad buddhi? Buddhi means thinking. So your thinking should be as if I'm getting a prasad. So like when I go to the temple, I get a banana or I get a little piece of sweet and I eat it, and I feel so fulfilled because it is something very special. So in the world, they say you work with prasad buddhi, means that whatever efforts you put in the world, you have put all your effort, and whatever ultimately the result you get, you accept it cheerfully without complaint. Like as I said, when you go to the temple, if you get a banana or you get a mango or you get a sweet, you know, you accept it. Okay, this is what I deserve. This is what I'm supposed to get. So similarly, when I put effort in the world, when I put effort and I do my best, then I may or may not get the results of my effort. You know, like 9 people are running in a race in the Olympics. Only one person is going to get the gold medal. One will get silver, one will get bronze, and other 6 will get nothing. So, one is, you know, you keep on complaining, oh, I didn't get it, or this guy cheated, or that happened. Or you say, okay, I did my best, but the others did better. And so I didn't get anything, but the gold medalist, you know, his timing was better, he trained better, he did a better job. So I got what I deserved. So being happy, okay, at least I came up to the Olympics, at least I came to the finals. You know, there were many who couldn't even make it from my country, from so many parts of the world. So being cheerful and accepting the results, and it could be anything. You go for a job interview and you don't get the job. It does not mean that you don't try hard. You try your best and you still didn't get the job. You say, Lord, maybe I didn't deserve this job. I didn't try hard enough. I didn't prepare hard enough. Maybe my CV was not good. Maybe my qualifications were not as good as the next person. Maybe I should take some extra courses to improve my qualification. So you put your best effort, but then at the end of the day, we each get what we deserve. You don't get what you desire. You don't get what you want. You get what you deserve. So accepting cheerfully what we get, without complaint, without criticism, without unhappiness, without, you know, speaking bad about others, is called prasad buddhi. So cheerfully accept, don't criticize, don't complain, don't speak bad about others. Speaking about others reminds me of this little story. This lady was looking in the mirror and she said, you know, I'm gaining weight, my face is getting wrinkled and my hair is turning gray. So she's all depressed. You know, she's gained weight, her face is wrinkled, her hair is turning gray. And she's standing in the mirror very depressed. And then she says, tells her husband, look, you know, all these things are happening. I've gained weight, I've wrinkles, my hair is turning gray. At least please pay me a compliment. Say something nice. So husband says, well, your eyesight is still good. He's still in the ICU, by the way. So that is not, you know, that is not, I mean, you know, if you can't say something good, be quiet. But a true devotee of the Lord either would, you know, say something kind or keep his mouth shut. Why? Because you have to be kind, you have to be loving. So accepting whatever I have without complaint, without criticism, without, you know, harsh words, is prasad buddhi. And cheerfully, God, that is what I deserve, I got it, and I'm happy with what I have, and that is called prasad buddhi. So that is the true devotee, that he says, I do my best. It doesn't mean that he stops trying. He does his best, And at the end of the day, God, thank you for whatever I have. If I didn't get what I want, tomorrow I'll work harder. So that is true devotion, that is true acceptance and with love. Then the next is steps in devotion, and that we will do in verse number 4, how one can increase one's devotion, and then we'll go more into detail about it next week, about the steps in devotion, and also talk about chanting the name of the Lord. So verse number 4, page 15. Kayavang mana karyamuttamam.
Pujanam japas chintanam kramat.
So kaya, vang, mana. We have three instruments that we can use for prayer, for devotion, to develop love for God, or to show our devotion, show our love for God. Or how can we pray? So he says there are three equipments we have: kaya, the body, vaak, the speech, and mind, mana. So we have three instruments: the body, the speech, and the mind. Now what do I do with the body? The body, I worship. I worship the Ida. What do I do with the speech? With the speech, I chant. And what do I do with the mind? I do with the mind, I contemplate. So with the body, I worship the idol of the Lord. With the speech, I chant his name. And with the mind, I contemplate. Now, idol worship, even though it is very strong in Hindus, we all our temples have beautiful idols, you know, where they have either Ram or Krishna, Shiva or Mother Goddess, and we decorate them with beautiful clothes, and then we offer food, and you know, we do a lot of elaborate prayers, elaborate rituals are done by the priests. And this was developed very strongly in ancient Hindu culture, and it has been maintained until now. The temples all over the country, all over the world, Hindu temples do that. They do offer ritual. But to some extent, idols are present in all religions. It is hard to contemplate on God, which is formless. You say God, which is formless, which has no shape, no form, no color. It becomes very difficult to contemplate upon that. So that's why even in the church, we find statues of Jesus and Mother Mary. So when I see that statue of Jesus, you know, I remind me of his sacrifice. When I see Mother Mary, reminds me of her love. So that idol represents the ideal. So the Jesus represents, you know, the Christ. When he became the Christ and he became a symbol of love and compassion for all. Mother Mary, when I see her, I remember, I think of her love and compassion for all. So, in Buddhism also, you know, they have, Buddha was very much against idols, but now we find in Buddhist temples, huge statues. We went to Vietnam and Laos and Cambodia and all that. Huge 20 feet, 30 feet, 40 foot statues of Buddha. Some of them are so high. And so much money and gold and all that is put, and all the jewels and all. So again, even though Buddha preached meditating upon the formless, but it is very difficult. See, Buddha could do that because he was so evolved. But for beginner Buddhists, it is very difficult. So they said, okay, make Buddha into a god. And so they made statues of Buddha. So people come and offer incense and light a candle and, you know, sit down there and contemplate upon Buddha. And hopefully, the idea is that when you see Buddha in that form, then you will read his teachings and you will learn about what he preached. And then through application, so from the form, you are supposed to go to the formless. Don't only get stuck on the form, because if you only get stuck on the form, you say Buddha alone is, everybody else is wrong, then you become fanatic, or, you know, Christ alone is good, right, and everybody else is wrong. So from the form, whether it's Jesus or Buddha or Krishna or Shiva, you go from the form to the formless. So from that form, you go to that one pervading consciousness that pervades the whole universe, and everything in the universe is that consciousness. So that is the idea. And then what that does is then you say all forms are His, all humans are Him, all. And whether I, and then you develop equal reverence for a church or for a temple or for a mosque, because what? These are all places of worship. Whether it's the Bible or the Quran or the Bhagavad Gita, whether it's a priest or a monk or a Muslim, you know, the priest, you have equal love for all. So with the body you worship the idol. And the worship is there in all faiths. You know, even in the church, people go in front of the picture of Mother Mary, they will light a candle and then they will chant some mantras. You know, what is the Mother Mary, the Lord is with thee, you know, blessed art thou, and all that. I don't remember now. I used to, because I went to a Catholic school when I was growing up. So I knew all the Catholic prayers, and blessed is the womb of the, you know, the fruit of thy womb. So when you are chanting, you are remembering the glory of the mother, and then through her, all the mothers in the world, and that's how you extend it. So when you are praying, you are utilizing all three. You are utilizing your body, you're utilizing your speech, and hopefully you're utilizing your mind. Your mind should be on that prayer. The mind should not be thinking about the stock market, you know, what happened, the stocks went down today, or what did my neighbor say, or what did my mother-in-law say. No, at that moment you are thinking about God. So that is the idea. So the body, the speech and the mind are all three in that prayer. When you are chanting the name of God, then what you are doing, you are utilizing the speech and the mind. You are not utilizing the body. In chanting, the body is not utilized, only the speech and the mind. You're chanting Om, or you are chanting the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Ghost, or Om Namah Shivaya, or whatever the mantra you are chanting. So the idea is that when you are chanting that mantra, your mind and your speech are both in that chant. But then when you are contemplating upon who is this God and what are His qualities and what does He do, then at that time you are not speaking anything. You're not doing any prayers, especially when we meditate. When you sit for meditation, in the beginning you may observe your breath and you may chant the mantra, you know, whatever you may do. But ultimately, when your mind becomes quiet, then you go inward and contemplate upon the Lord's qualities, His nature, and that me and that God are one. So, from gross, it becomes subtler. The body is the grossest, then the speech, ultimately the mind. And this is somewhat easier when you are sitting in front of the idol and you are offering the prayers and you are lighting a candle and you are chanting. It is easier because, as they say in this book also, if you have a three-wheel cycle anybody can ride, correct? A tricycle anybody can ride. Even a child, 2-year-old, you put her on a tricycle, she'll start moving very fast. But for a two-wheel, you have to train her. You have to hold that and walk behind her, have some training wheels, and then eventually take out the training wheels and then teach her how to ride. But suppose she wants to ride a single-wheel cycle. Now, that is very hard. Only a circus, you know, expert can do it. So the subtler it becomes, the more difficult it becomes. So similarly, praying or worshipping, the 16 steps we'll do next week. So worshipping the idol is the easiest. Little more difficult than that is chanting the mantra, where you're only chanting the mantra and your idea is that my attention should be not only on the sound of the mantra, but the qualities of the Lord that the mantra represents. And ultimately, when your mind becomes quiet and the chanting stops, then in that silence you are contemplating upon the Lord, and that is the subtlest. Then you only have support of the mind. Initially I had the body, the speech and the mind. Then when I was chanting, I had the speech and the mind. And ultimately, when I'm contemplating, I only have the support of the mind. So that is what the teacher is saying. that from gross you go subtler. Does not mean that straight away I am going to start contemplating, I don't need to chant the name of the Lord or I don't need to pray. No, you need to do that. You need to worship, you need to pray, because as we said, the idol represents the ideal. Like even the national flag, you know, now people say, oh, there is the stars and stripes. And when it is there, everybody stands up and salutes. And somebody comes and he takes the flag and he tears it or he burns it or he puts it on the ground and spits on it. We get very angry. Come on, what are you doing? He said, why are you upset? It's just a piece of cloth. No. It's not a piece of cloth. It's the national flag. You know, it has the stars and stripes. So the cloth may be just a piece, but it represents the nation, the United States of America. So similarly, through this body, I then go to the speech, go to the mind. So that is how the devotion is increased. The subtler it becomes, the more difficult it becomes. But that is the idea, that ultimately I have to fill my mind with devotion. My mind has to be totally filled with love and devotion for God. So this is in brief the practice of devotion and the principles of devotion. Next week we'll talk a little more about prayer, worship, and about speech. I'll try to cover the two topics next week. What do we mean by chanting the name of God, and what do we mean by prayer? So, any comments?
Would you say remembering God as you go through your day would be equal to worshiping? I mean, that's.
I think it would be equal to probably chanting. And when you're contemplating, you're contemplating upon His qualities, upon His essential nature. But you're somewhere here, I would say, in the speech, because you are not at that time doing any action with your body. You are remembering Him. It could be, and if as your mind becomes quiet, it could not yet become contemplation. I would say probably it's at the level of chanting. So remembering God, yes, I think would be equal to chanting His name with full attention. I think. No? Anything?
No, that sounds good. Yeah.
But yeah, what is the benefit of remembering God? Swami Chinmayananda says that turn your mind in love to God, He will purify it and return it back to you. So when you remember God with love, your mind becomes pure. Because when you cannot remember God and then have impure thoughts in your head, because God is all love and purity and compassion and kindness and sweetness. So all those beautiful qualities, love, peace, justice, all those qualities the Lord has. And so how can I, when I'm truly thinking of God with true love and devotion, my mind cannot but become, you know, peaceful and compassionate. So the idea is not only to remember God, but become God-like. Just as God is loving, compassionate, kind, sweet, just, so I should develop those qualities. I should have love for all. I should develop peace, compassion, sharing, kindness, because Lord has everything and this whole universe He shares with us. He's made this beautiful world for us to enjoy, given us all what we have, our body, our mind, our intellect, our abilities. So just as the Lord is kind and compassionate towards me, I should become kind and compassionate to others. I should share what I can with others, whatever I have to help. So remembering should not be just mechanically just chanting the name of God, which is good. There's nothing wrong with that. But then it should go beyond, where I should develop those qualities consciously, which will be covered, you know, later on in this text. What is remembering God? What do we mean by remembering God? It is there in one of the verses. It's a very beautiful text. In very short, He has covered a lot of material.
So when we hear a song and we like the tune, and then all of a sudden during the day we occupy you probably singing it, is that the same as chanting? Well, reverberate during the day and before going to sleep, would be the same effect?
Yeah, sure. If it's a spiritual song which talks about God and His qualities, and when you are singing, you are remembering the form and visualizing, and then then yeah, there's nothing. That's good too. That's good. The idea of chanting, we mostly use it in meditation. While before sleeping at night, probably if you have a beautiful song, you can think about, that's good. In meditation, we use chanting of the name of the Lord because the idea is to quieten the mind. But in a singing of a song, your mind is likely to not become that quiet. You know, it will be full with love, but won't become silent. But when you are chanting a mantra, saying Om or whatever, then your mind is from many thoughts coming to one thought. And that is the sound of the mantra. And ultimately, even that sound disappears in silence. So, in meditation, using the mantra is helpful. But yeah, for developing love for God, sure, if there's a nice song or a nice beautiful hymn that talks about His qualities and which you can memorize and sing, yeah, that's very good. Not only that, but if you can sing, you can even sing for others. You know, if you have an opportunity, you sing for others to develop devotion in them too. If you are able to sing, if you have that ability.